Chapter 2, The Hopeless Hijackers. Duane and Darryl were not the brightest of individuals. They had carried out some small-time robberies and the odd car theft. They were clearly stupid, but thankfully never violent. They travelled to England for a short vacation, and that was where Duane thought they should move up into the big league and hijack a plane. They realized that all plane hijackers had a cause, so they were not going to be any different. They decided that their cover for trying to extort $1 million from the airline would be under the guise of an independence movement. How they managed to assemble two genuine-looking bombs and smuggle them on board a flight from London's Heathrow Airport to Houston, Texas, is still under investigation. Strangely, on that same flight were our two heroes, Jack and Eliza Swan. The Swans were special guests of the United States government. Scientists at the Johnson Space Center wanted to find out how Jack and Eliza had developed the ability to speak. They believed that discovering this secret could help not only the astronaut program, but could help physically challenged children with speech problems. This last part was the clincher. When Jack learned that he could help children, particularly ones with speech problems, then he gave his immediate consent. He rather generously volunteered Eliza at the same time. This was Jack and Eliza's first flight without the aid of their big, white, and wonderful wings. Airline officials escorted them into the first-class section of a 747 jetliner. The flight attendants were wonderful and immediately offered Jack an assortment of candies and goodies. This before the plane had even taken off. Eliza turned down the offer of alcoholic drinks, disappointing Jack. It turns out that Jack was never going to be a good or frequent flyer. As the engines roared into life and the plane took off, Jack grasped the edge of his seat in panic. He grasped Eliza's wings so tightly that she had to turn and smack him on the beak. "Relax, relax, you great big white waste of space. You're embarrassing me in front of all the passengers."
"I can't help it, Eliza. This is all new and it's very frightening."
As the plane levelled out at 36,000 feet and the engines throttled back, Jack finally relaxed. When the attendant asked if there was anything they needed, it was Eliza who coldly said, "Give him something to shut him up and make him sleep, please." Jack gulped the drink down, and with the seat reclined and pillows all around him, he was soon asleep and snoring soundly. The flight across the Atlantic was uneventful. Jack loved the in-flight meals, and the movies on the little video screen had him oohing and aahing all the way to the east coast of the United States. Duane and Darryl made their move just as the 747 entered American airspace. They leapt up from their seats in the front row and pulled open their shirts to reveal two sinister-looking devices.
"This is a hijack! Don't nobody do nothing stupid!"
screamed Duane. His brother Darryl looked at him in disgust.
"Duane, you just used a double negative. Don't nobody do nothing? How will people take us serious if you don't talk proper like I do?" "Shut up, Darryl, and hand this list of demands to the flight attendant."
Darryl handed the paper with the list of demands to a nervous flight attendant.
"Please don't do anything stupid, gentlemen, and I will hand this to the pilot at once. Let's see if he can understand it. Who wrote this? Your handwriting is terrible."
The pilot radioed the list of demands to the Houston control tower, and soon the FBI and police were converging on the airport. Jack was slowly waking from a deep and peaceful sleep when his bleary eyes caught sight of Duane and Darryl standing a few feet away from him. Duane was menacing as he shouted a warning to all the passengers.
"Don't anybody move. My brother Darrell and I have two bombs strapped to our chests, and we are desperate men.
Dwayne, you fool, you just told them my name. Sukatesh, and now I've just told them yours.
Listen up, folks, and nobody will get hurt. We represent the Independence Declaration Initiative of the States. We demand independence, and we demand it now.
Darrell pulled his hand over his mouth so the passengers couldn't hear him speak to his brother.
Dwayne, where do you think you got this pile of garbage? We are independent. We have been since 1776. No, we are not, Darrell. There's a physical connection to both Mexico and Canada, and Canada keeps beating us at hockey.
Jack had been listening to this conversation and slowly unbuckled his seatbelt and waddled up in front of the dozy duo. His mind raced as he remembered the many hours he had spent watching old movies on Saturday morning. Determined to save the day, all he needed was some psychology and a genuine-sounding southern accent.
Why, gentlemen, I do believe I have the honor of addressing two fine patriots from the South.
Dwayne and Darrell were not ready for this apparition that appeared before them. Jack quickly called them with the edges of his wings into a tight and confidential grouping.
Boys, I am a Southern colonel, but these dastardly airline people are trying to foil your brave endeavor. Do you see a tall, distinguished Southern colonel in front of you? Think of fried chicken, boys. Does that bring an image to mind?
No, sir. All we see is a small white duck, said Dwayne.
That, boys, is because as soon as there is a hijacking announced, the plane automatically releases hallucinating gas into the air.
Hallucinating gas?
Dwayne and Darrell looked at one another, horror-struck.
Yes, boys, let me be polite here. Those Yankees will do anything to prevent our legitimate Southern aspirations. Look at me. When in the name of Sam Hill have you ever seen a talking swan before, wearing a leather flying helmet and with two huge blue eyes? This has to be the effects of hallucinating gas.
What do we do, sir?
Don't worry. I have an antidote, but you have to trust me, boys. You do trust me, don't you?
Yes, sir, Colonel.
Now, what was the name of your organization again?
The Independence Declaration Initiative of the States.
Okay, boys, now let's see what those letters spell out. That's IDIOTS. That's what they call an acronym. Yes, sirree, an acronym. And to be honest, gentlemen, you could have picked a better one.
Down at the Houston Control Tower, FBI criminal profilers were trying to get an edge on who they were dealing with. Special Agent Leland Oscarmeyer was in charge of the case.
Okay, what are their demands? Read them out to me, Agent Gupta Singh.
They are saying, sir, that they are with the Independence Declaration Initiative of the States. A passenger heard them say the names Dwayne and Darrell.
Agent Oscarmeyer's eyes closed angrily.
Dwayne and Darrell, not those two idiots again. What are the demands this time?
They are wanting $1 million in cash, but they say they want it in quarters, so you won't be able to trace the money.
Anything else?
Yes, sir, they are wanting 2 first-class railway tickets to Mexico.
Railway tickets?
Yes, sir. They say that flying isn't safe anymore. They say there's too many idiot hijackers.
Is that it?
Well, they were additional demands. Immediately on landing, they want delivery of 2 large cheeseburgers, but they said, could we please hold the mayo?
Agent Oscarmeyer walked slowly over to the control tower window and, gazing up into the sky, said,
are there any reports coming from any other passengers?
Yes, sir, and this is all really, really strange. It seems there is a British detective swan on board who is talking to the hijackers right as we are speaking.
Good. See if we can get in contact with this man, Swan, and see what help he needs.
No, sir, that's not his name. He is a swan. You know, big white feathers, the kind that fly.
Agent Oscar closed his eyes tightly. He remains silent and motionless for a full 5 seconds, then seized his assistant by his cloak lapels and screamed, "There are 250 people on that plane, and two good old idiot boys with bombs strapped to them. Now you tell me that the only thing between them and disaster is a British detective who just happens to be a talking swan?"
Back in the 747, Jack's strategy with Duane and Darryl was beginning to take effect.
Listen to me carefully, boys. I'll say this only once. If we don't combat the effects of the hallucinating gas soon, they, you know who I mean, they will come and take your bombs away.
What do we do, Colonel?
Oh, by the way, is that your dear wife over there, the one with the awful pink-colored flying helmet? Yes, son, she is. And if that doesn't convince you of the hallucinating gas, nothing will. Now I want you to take the explosive sticks out of the bomb. Now steady yourself, boys. And I want you to hide it where the sun don't shine.
Oh, no, Colonel, you don't want us to...
No. Nothing like that. I want you to eat them.
Eat them, Colonel?
Listen to me, boys. At Thanksgiving, when your mama makes that beautiful fruitcake with the icing sugar on the top, what is that wonderful, sweet-smelling stuff right underneath the icing sugar?
Marzipan?
Exactly. Now look at the explosive. It looks just like marzipan, doesn't it? Smell it carefully.
Why, Colonel, you're unbelievable. It does smell exactly like an... wait a minute. Well, it even tastes like marzipan.
Think of the cause, boys, now, and eat it all up.
Jack moved up closer to Darryl and gazed up into his mouth.
Darryl, are those mercury amalgam fillings you have in your back teeth?
Jack moved even closer and, covering his beak with his wingtip, whispered,
"Are you still getting those secret messages from the CIA?
Darryl clasped his hand to his mouth in shock.
"How did you know about that, Colonel?
"Well, Darryl, I am from the South, and I might talk slow, but it doesn't mean I'm stupid. Now we need two other things to make an antidote for the hallucinating gas. You boys must have some of that good old chewing tobacco."
"Yes, sir. Bought a new tin just before we boarded."
"Okay, now, take a big wad and chew it well, and then swallow it all."
Jack poked his head round the wall to where the flight attendants were sitting.
"Darling, could I trouble you for some refreshment? Possibly 4 cans of Mountain Dew. Oh, actually, I fancy a can myself. Make that 5 cans if you would, darling." "Now, boys, we're almost finished. Just swig this refreshing beverage down, and if you don't mind, I think I'll join you."
"Now what happens, Colonel?"
"Now, boys, we wait for Mr. Peristalsis."
Jack glanced around, and several rows back he saw several military men in desert camouflage uniforms. The captain was staring intently at Jack. Jack gave him a big, slow wink, and the captain smiled and nodded back. Combining plastic explosive, chewing tobacco, and several cans of fizzy soft drinks had Duane and Darryl bent double in agony. They staggered towards the nearby lavatories, but not before Jack relieved them of their bulky and uncomfortable explosive vests. Jack immediately turned and said,
"Marines, front and center, now!"
Within seconds, 8 uniformed Marines surrounded the washrooms. The captain walked up to Jack and saluted him.
"Captain William Walker, sir, 129th Marine Air Cavalry at your service."
"Ah, the cavalry at last. I don't suppose any of you have a bugle tucked under his jacket." "Well, Captain, I'm sure you and your boys are eager to get back home to your loved ones. But wait just a few more minutes."
Jack tapped on the bathroom doors.
"Duane, Darryl, make sure you flush before you leave the facility, and please do remember to wash your hands thoroughly."
With the safety of the passengers and aircraft now in the hands of the Marines, Jack waddled back to his seat. The sounds of Duane and Darryl groaning in agony caused laughter to ripple throughout the cabin. One of the Marines turned to his captain and said, "Sir, how did the Swan manage to disarm these guys and arrange them to be groaning away in this lavatory?"
"Who knows, son? And perhaps the Swan is in disguise. He may even be the legendary masked cowboy. You know, the Groan Arranger."
The limousine arrived promptly at 9 p.m. at Jack and Eliza's hotel. Two neatly dressed security men escorted them to the car, and several minutes later they arrived at the governor's mansion. Two large doors of the governor's office opened, revealing the welcoming arms of the great man himself. The governor was smiling and shaking his head in disbelief. Jack laughed.
"Yes, Governor, I know just how you feel. The bright pink flying helmet. Must admit it gives me a chuckle."
The governor said that he had talked to the police in England and Inspector Sword had suggested a small gift would be in order.
"Hey, I understand you already have one of these, but not an American one."
The governor handed Jack a black leather wallet. Jack opened it to see an identity card with his name and photograph, and on the opposite side, a shiny gold police badge.
"Jack Swan, with the power invested in me as governor of the state of Texas, I have the honor to award you this badge. Further, I declare that you are now an official member of one of the oldest and most respected police forces in the world."
Everyone in the room broke into a thunderous roar of applause.
"Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the newest member of the Texas Rangers, Special Agent Jack Swan."